For over 50 years, author Gore Vidal has been at the centre of both America's intellectual life and its politics. A rare character whose interests and relationships have spanned both Kennedy and Kerouac. Born into a virtual political aristocracy, Gore Vidal turned to literature, producing 22 acclaimed novels, 5 plays and numerous screenplays. But the producers of the satire Bob Roberts captured the other Gore Vidal, playing the senator he could have been, bemoaning the erosion of America's founding liberal principles.
Now it's almost exactly 30 years since I came to the Senate. It was 1960. Jack Kennedy had been elected president. We're going to get America moving again. There was going to be a new frontier. The world was going to be a better place.
Throughout his career, Vidal, the author, immersed himself in the politics of his nation.
Running for office largely out of just sheer rage and frustration. That you have a society that is constantly at war with everybody on earth, doesn't give a goddamn about the people who live in the society, doesn't give a goddamn about education, and look at 10 million unemployed.
A mixed strand of literature and political intrigue that he continued in semi-retirement and semi-residency in Italy, including moments of high controversy when he defended Oklahoma bomber Timothy McVeigh.
Well, he's neither crazy and certainly doesn't hate the world, but he hates the American federal government. This is plainly a country in great trouble, a country that is beginning to run amok. And McVeigh's sacrifice of himself to his sense of justice, no, I don't approve of his killing the children, is a wake-up call. It's an alarm bell.
Dual threads of politics and literature have run through Gore Vidal's life, but no more so than in recent years. The novels have stopped, but the essays have been pouring out. His most recent collection, Dreaming War, Blood for Oil and the Cheney Bush Junta, is one of his most overtly political publications. A vitriolic and eloquent condemnation of both the Bush administration and the war in Iraq, it's been on the US bestsellers list for over 8 weeks. I spoke with Gore Vidal from his home in L.A. Gore Vidal, thanks for joining us on Dateline.
I'm happy to have crossed the Dateline down under.
In the past few years, you've shifted from being a novelist to principally an essayist, or in your own words, a pamphleteer. It's almost the reverse of most writers' careers. Why the shift for you?
Why the shift in the United States of America, which has obliged me since I've spent most of my life marinated in the history of my country, and I am so alarmed by what is happening with our global empire and our wars against the rest of the world, it is time for me to take political action. And I think anybody who has the position, has a platform, must do so. It's also a family tradition. My grandfather lost his seat in the Senate because he opposed going into the First World War. Then he won it back 10 years later on exactly the same set of speeches that he'd lost it. So attitudes change, attitudes can be changed. But now I am not terribly optimistic that there is much anyone can do, that the machine is set to go. And to have a major depression going on, economic really collapse all around the world, and begin a war against an enemy that has done nothing against us other than what our media occasionally alleges. This is lunacy.
Over the past 40 years or so, you've written about the undermining of the foundations of the Constitution, liberty, human rights, free speech. Indeed, you've probably damned every administration throughout that period on that score. Is George Bush really any worse?
No, he certainly is worse. We've never had a kind of reckless one who may believe, and there's a whole theory now that he's inspired by love of our Lord, that he is an apocalyptic Christian who will be going to heaven while the rest of us go to blazes. I hope that isn't the case. I hope that's exaggeration. No, we've had, the problem began when we got the empire which was brilliantly done in the most Machiavellian, and I mean that in the best sense of the word, way by Franklin Roosevelt. With the winning of World War II, we were everywhere on earth, our troops, and our economy was number one. Europe was ruined. And from that, then in 1950, the great problem began when Harry Truman decided to militarize the economy, maintain a vast military establishment in every corner of the earth, meanwhile denying money to schools, really to the infrastructure of the nation. So we have been at war steadily since 1950. I did one of my little pamphlets as a perpetual war for perpetual peace, how that worked. I mean, we've gone everywhere. We have the enemy of the month club. One month it's Noriega, king of drugs. Another one it's Gaddafi. We hated his eyeliner or something and killed his daughter. We moved from one enemy to another, and the press, the media, has never been more disgusting.
You charge what you call the Cheney Bush junta with empire building. But hasn't America always been an empire, and isn't this junta just a little bit more honest about it? They aren't shy in proclaiming their belief that America has something worth exporting.
I prefer hypocrisy to honesty any time, if hypocrisy will keep the peace. No, we have had an imperial streak from the very beginning, but it didn't get going until 1898, when we picked a war with Spain because we had our eye on Spanish colonial possessions, specifically the Philippines, which got us into your part of the world, into Asia. And from that moment on, we really were a global empire. And then by the time of the Second World War, we'd achieved it. It was all ours. No, what is going on now is kind of interesting. We've never seen anything like it. There's a group of what they call neoconservatives. Most of them were old Stalinists, and then they were Trotskyites, and then finally they are neoconservatives now. They preach openly, and they're all over the War Department, as we used to call it, the Defense Department. Mr. Wolfowitz is one of their brains. And they write really extraordinarily frightening overviews of the United States and the rest of the world, that we, after all, have all the military power that there is, and let's use it. Let's take the earth. It's there for us. They are talking glibly now about, after they get rid of Saddam, which they think is going to be a very easy thing to do, well, Iran is next. One of them, not long ago, made a public statement, it's time we really had regime change in all the Arab countries.
Well, Bush has claimed that the American belief in liberty will deliver a free and peaceful Iraq. Even with the stench of oil in the air, George Bush probably can deliver that, a free and peaceful Iraq, that is. Isn't there a legitimate case to be argued that there's a greater good at work here?
There is no greater good at work. We cannot deliver it. Only the Iraqis can deliver that. You don't go in and smash up a country, which we will do, and gain their love so that they then want to imitate our highly corrupt political system. We saw what happened in November 2000 when Albert Gore won the popular vote by 600,000. He actually won the electoral vote of Florida. But a lot of dismal things happened and denied him the election. So that's what happened there. So for us to talk about a democracy that we're going to translate into other lands is the height of hypocrisy and is simply foolish. You don't invent governments for other people, huh?
The American virtues of individual liberties, although viewed by many people with some cynicism, are still meaningful to people around the world. It's interesting to note the support that America is getting from the former Eastern Bloc European nations, Rumsfeld's New Europe. The American message still resonates with them, doesn't it?
They're not clued in to what sort of country the United States is. They've certainly found out what a kind of country the Soviet Union was, and they didn't like that one bit, and they associate us with their relative liberation. That's all. what we're really about, they don't know. They believe the propaganda. They believe the media, which is constantly going on about democracy and freedom and liberty and the greatest country on earth and so on. And the only thing wrong in the world is there are evil people who hate us because we are so good. Well, I don't know how anybody can buy this line, but people do. People are not very well informed. The well-informed countries, Western Europe, know perfectly well what our game is. General de Gaulle took France out of NATO because he suspected that we were in the empire-building business, and he didn't want to go along with it. Yet, simultaneously, France remained an ally in case there was a major war with the Soviet. I don't think we should take too seriously those East European countries. In due course, they will wake up, as Turkey did, that we are dangerous.
The defense of American civil liberties has been a consistent theme of yours, most vocally in recent months, in response to the Patriot Act and the new Homeland Defense Agency. But it would seem that Americans don't share your views in any significant numbers. Why not?
They do. What I do is quite popular. Now, mind you, we're not much of a reading country, but we certainly watch a lot of television. You can pick up a tremendous audience. Because, you know, millions of people have been marching.
And yet there's been very little, very little political response to the establishment of those agencies or the very dramatic constitutional changes that have been made in the Patriot Act. We're not really hearing a strong movement, not from the Democrats, not in the media.
Well, we don't hear it because they're part of it. You know, we have elections, very expensive ones, and very corrupt ones. But we don't have politics. We made a trade-off somewhere. This was after Harry Truman established the national security state. And suddenly television came along and elections cost billions. It cost $3 billion to elect Bush. That's a lot of money. And it was a campaign almost without issues except personalities. Nothing was talked about going to war as quickly as possible, which, of course, obviously was in his mind. So you have a country that is not political, without political parties. There are movements of people which go largely unrecorded. There are eloquent voices out there, but you don't see them in print. You don't hear them on the air.
Well, one of those voices is one of your contemporaries, Norman Mailer. He wrote recently that after a long life, he's concluded that fascism, not democracy, is the natural state, and that America as a nation is in a pre-fascist era, a mega banana republic increasingly dominated by the military. Is that a view that you share?
I have those days, yes, such as Norman is having. But I am more deeply rooted in the old Constitution, with all of its flaws, and in the Bill of Rights, with all of its virtues. That was something special on earth. And Jefferson was something special on earth when he said that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Nobody had ever used that phrase in a constitution before or set that out as a political goal for everyone. Well, out of that came the energies of the United States that made it the number one country in the world and the most inventive and the most creative. And then the devil entered Eden, and we ended up with an Asiatic empire and a European empire and a South American dependency. And we are not what we were. The people get no education. I call it the United States of amnesia.
You're one of America's harshest cultural and political critics, and yet you write and clearly talk very romantically about the Republic. You've documented those ebbs and flows where you believe it's verged from its founding principles. In the broader sweep, what is the state of America today?
Adrift, but adrift toward war. And it's a war that we can't win. I suppose we can blow up Baghdad, but I think from that start, if that happens, we can count that on retaliation from 1 billion Muslims, and who knows what other. We're opening up, I don't know, Pandora's box. This is, we're opening a tomb. And God knows what will come out of it. This is dangerous country. This isn't just ordinary colonial aggression. A European power wants to take over Panama, something like that. This isn't it at all. First of all, they're proudly talking about a cultural and religious clash between Christianity and devil's work. Well, that's very dangerous and very stupid. And I don't know how you win that one.
Well, there are definite echoes of the 1950s in America today. Are the 1950s back with us?
Well, nothing repeats itself except human folly, so no. I do feel an energy across the country, this may be because I go to energetic groups that are fighting their own government, but they're going to lose because the government is now totally militarized and ready for war. A war they can't really sell to the rest of the world, but they're going to do it anyway. This is something new. We've never had a period like this. And it was, to somebody like me, who is really hooked into constitutional America, this is incredible. We cannot trust the Supreme Court after their mysterious decisions on the election of 2000. We have no political parties. We've never had much of them. I mean, Democrats and Republicans. We have the party of essentially corporate America. And it has two right wings, one called Democratic, one called Republican. So in the absence of politics, with a media that is easy to manipulate, and in the hands of very few people with interests in wars and oil and so on, I don't see how you get the word out. But one tries, because there is nothing else to be done.
Corvidal, thanks for joining us on Dateline.
Thank you.